Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 2 for Autumn Semester 2012. Lecture 21, delivered on November 7, 2012. The title of this lecture is Bond Markets.
Today, bond markets. I'm going to go through different types of bonds, introduce you to yield curves, and first off, I'm going to break down bonds simply as I did last time, and then show you some data so that you can actually look at bond market quotes yourself and act like you know what you're doing, like I do. First of all, remember, I break down bonds in several different ways. I won't go into the personal bonds, but we have government bonds, and I'll get to those in a moment or two. And then we have corporate bonds. Now, corporate bonds, I'm going to break these down into more detail in a moment, but I wanted to expose you right off the bat to just looking at bond quotes, seeing what they look like, and giving you a chance how this stuff looks. Now, what I am showing you here, is there some reason that sucks? There. Okay. The market data that I'm showing you is from the organization FINRA, which is a self-policing regulatory body that oversees pretty much every financial investment institution in the country. It works in parallel with government agencies and with other self-policing organizations in the marketplace to watch over brokers and dealers, to make sure they keep their noses clean, to also interpret regulatory promulgations, and also they provide some information that is quite useful. For example, it's awfully hard to find bond quote data in typical user-friendly formats like Yahoo and Google and MSN. But here you see it. These are active investment-grade bonds, and I'm going to go through, just show you how to read these kinds of charts. First things first is obviously the issuer name and the trading symbol. You'll notice that bonds have a slightly odd trading symbol. You can tell a bond just because, well, this is not exactly true, but you suspect you're in a bond market if you see a dot after a couple of letters. There are other things that do that too. But now, first thing you're going to see is a coupon, which I've talked about before. So, for example, this CS First Boston is going to have a coupon of 5%. In other words, twice a year, the investors will get $25 if you hold one of these bonds, a $1,000 bond. And it is due, whoa, that one's right up here at the real close. That one's nice and close here in, about 6 months or so? Something like that. And now, here's where I want to look at next, is the three rating services that FINRA points to are Moody's, Standard & Poor's, and Fitch. These are different bond rating services that provide their assessment of the investment quality of a bond. Now, right now, we're in the investment grade bonds, so you're going to see a lot of A's. Okay, so now Moody's, one of the things that you can tell Moody's, for example, is that you'll see numbers and small letters along with capital letters. If you see a bond rating and it's got a number or it's got a big letter and then some small letters, that's a Moody's rating. Now also, S&P and Fitch, a little bit more difficult to tell them apart. But these three different rating services, they're out there. Always keep in mind that at the end of the day, you're the one who has to make the final call on the investment grade of a bond or any investment you make. These services will do what they can. Sometimes they are suspect. I'll get into that in a minute here, but okay. Obviously, these are all investment grades. You see all A's in them. Taking it down here, high yield bonds, that's probably high yield, high risk, high expected return. So there you go. You're going to see more B's and the C's. The C's would all point to not investment grade at all. And then you're going to go convertibles. As you can see, these convertibles, most of them are not investment grade. Okay? Most of the convertibles, because they smell bad. They were issued for their risky bonds. Okay, but anyway, going across here, in a given trading day, you're going to have buys and sells, and the pressure of the market through this mass of buyers and sellers will push the price up and down. Now, you can't capture all of it in a couple of numbers. You can use a chart to see the ups and downs through a day. But at the same time, most of these services tell you the high and the low for the day. And that could be, so in this case, we can see that the swing on the CS First Boston was pretty tight. And that would be partly the result of the fact that this thing is so close to its maturity date that volatility will not be too much on it. Volatility in a bond tightens up as you get toward maturity. The volatility tightens up as you get toward maturity. Simply because there is less speculative risk in the security, because this bond in 6 months is going to pay its investors their $1,000 and that'll be the end of it. So there's not much potential for the interest rate environment, the macroeconomic interest rate environment, to have that much impact on this bond's coupon, the spread on the coupon between that and the macro interest rates. So there you go. You'll notice, just if you're interested in the investments aspect of it, you'll notice that the last, in other words, where it finished the day, was at the high for the day. So what that would tell us is that ups and downs through the day, and we could look at the chart to see how that worked. At the end of the day, the market assessed that this bond was going to be at its high for the day. So any selling during the day was recovered, and whatever else happened, it was okay. This bond reached its top. Now, excuse me. And that would tell, and this change says, from the last on the previous trading day to the last on this trading day, you had this right here. And then you got your yield on this one, which is, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, but why does that suck like that? That's a weird yield on that. For one thing, it looks like these tables are there's something a little bit wrong with the table right here. But now, let me go down here and look at some of these really long, far-out bonds here. You've got United Health Group. And again, these are all high investment-grade bonds. You got United Health Group. Its coupon is 6.625%. So in other words, $66.25 a year. What is that? $33.12 every 6 months. You're an investor. If you bought one of these $1,000 bonds, you would get that much as a check every 6 months, $33.12. This is a long one. This one is way out there. What is that? 25 years? Is that 20? Something like that, 25 years. So this one would have, all things considered, this one would have more swing in it. It would have the potential for more volatility. And as we go across here, we can see, well, yeah, we do see more movement in this price. And we see that this one actually finished up about in the middle of its wide swings for the day. It swung up, swung down, and at the end of the day, it basically finished about in the middle of the trading range that it had for the day. And the same kind of thinking that I'm telling you here, we can do with stocks, which I'll show you next week, looking at actual stock quotes and give you a little insight into how you think as an investor, if you want to actively watch your investments, how you think about what the markets are doing from day to day. And then we can see, interestingly enough here, notice that this bond is selling at a serious premium to par. I want to make sure you see that. Do you see this? That thing, that son of a dog is really up there, way above 100. You see that high, well above par, which means that that coupon is extraordinarily generous compared to what the market says it needs to be. 6.625%, the market is saying, are you kidding me? Look at all that candy. And so you will see, as a result of that, with that very high price, the yield will be considerably below the coupon on the bond. And you can it's just pure logic here. For example, you'll notice, look at this, look right here. See this guy? See how close to par this Oracle is? You see that trading range right there? Right, just a little above 100, just a little above par, a little premium to par. Well, if you look at the coupon, 1.2%, the market's saying, well, that's about right for Oracle. And so if you look over here, sure enough, the yield is very close to the bond's coupon. So you can see all these different pieces that I've taught you through this course kind of coming together here. The coupon is right near the yield, and that's why you're seeing this bond trading at about par. The market's saying, for a company with the risk of Oracle, its debt, whatever debt this is actually probably commensurate with an interest rate, a coupon of about 1.2%. Market says that's a little generous because it's a little above par, but not too much. Now, working my way down here, I'm going to go the most active high-yield bonds. This is just the hot stuff, stuff the traders are really smacking around a lot. And if you look at some of these, you'll see, for example, these are high-yield bonds. And interestingly enough, notice that many of these are selling at a premium to par, which means that their coupon is better than it needs to be, so you would expect the yield to be lower than that. Well, interestingly enough, well, Clear Channel Holdings, it's selling at a discount. Look at all that price swing. Do you see that? That's a pretty heavy price swing. From a 96.625 to 99.875, that's a lot of swing. And if you look at it, well, that's 8 years out. That's got enough. That's out there enough that you can expect price volatility. Although, I am a little surprised by that much price volatility in it. That's a lot of movement on that son of a dog there. But we can see that at the end of the day, the change was 50 cents on it, or actually $5 on it. And you go down through here, and you'll notice that here we've got one that is selling at a real discount to par. And the market's saying it should be paying about 9%. Thing pays 8%. So we're going to smack the ass off that bond. And that's one of the reasons it's a high-yield bond, is because it's a risky bond. If you look at that one, what the hell was I just looking at there that was like that? Oh, geez. Notice American Stores. You see a C. Anything that has a C in a Moody's, that's below investment grade. And all that means is that you are taking some serious risk when you do that. In the B range, okay, A's generally investment grade quality across these. B's, they are investment grade, but they have speculative aspects to them. That's how you think about it. They are still investment grade. In the Bs, you're probably not going to lose your money to a bankruptcy as a bondholder. But at the same time, there are issues with the company. Might be challenges to the revenues. It might be questions about their financial statements. It might be something in the ratios that's not in the range that we consider to be across-the-board uniform, high-quality stuff. It's sort of like, you know, have you ever been on a date? Okay, I just want to make sure. Okay, now, it's like you have a really nice girl, but just like at 11 o'clock, she suddenly turns into a werewolf. But it's only for a few minutes, and then she goes back. Everything's cool after that. Okay? Or it's sort of like a plate of food, and then on one side of it, some aliens monster reaches out. Hey, 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 hey. You stab it, and it goes away. Well, you know, there are all kinds of things that can make it so that it is not the real quality experience that you were thinking it was going to be. It was sort of like going to that Batman movie in Colorado. Good movie, but, you know, too soon, I think so. Okay. I can't do one damn lecture without getting off topic. Why is that? Okay. But, okay, now, again, the B's investment quality, but there are speculative aspects. So don't bitch if things get a little bit ugly and scary with the bond. You're going to see some more price volatility. You're going to see some news that might scare the crap out of you about the company, or at least trouble you a little bit. You're in a little bit higher risk, therefore you're going to be buying into a higher expected return on a bond like this. You're going to see more price volatility, and I'll get back to that in just a second here. And then you go down to the C, and below that, that is speculative. This is no place for beginners to start, and it's not even really any place that most professionals will go. There are specialized markets for this kind of junk. We don't call it junk. We call it non-investment grade bonds, and there are markets for it. They are not markets that you as an individual investor or even you as a fund manager would probably ever want to probe, but there are markets for it. Remember, because bonds that are that risky, anything that has that kind of risk is going to have a higher expected return. You can take a beating on those markets, but at the same time, if that's your game, if you're a risk taker, there you go. There's your dinner right there. Go for it. Now, I want to get back real quick to volatility. In terms of traders, some institutions, they are actually all into the idea of volatility. I have known people in investments. All they care about is volatility. How wide the swings are going to be, because the wider the swings, the more chance they can catch a low point and buy and then have a big high upswing and sell, or vice versa. They can catch something at the high, sell it, and then pick it back up at the low. Some investor types love this kind of stuff. It's like some people like giant, insane roller coasters that nearly break your neck, send you to the moon, bring you back, show you the face of Jesus, and then take you on a trip over to Mars. Other people like me, no, I don't want that. And so it's all a matter of what your risk tolerance is. What was I going to say here? Jeez, Zoe. Am I looking at that right? No. But as you can see, notice that, interestingly enough, across the board, do you see a pattern in both the active investment grade and the active and the active higher yield grade? Do you see this tendency for the bond prices to be above par? Not all of them are, but a number of them are above par. Do you see that right here in these? That right now in the markets, there is quite a bit of paper out there that is selling at a premium. I don't know if you would be ready to give me the answer to this, but let me give it a try here. Would you have an idea as to why that would happen? Why we would be seeing that? It's not just a fluke. It's all across the board. You see these premiums to par. Yeah. Well, that would make you want to buy, but that would make you want to move towards equities. These are bonds. These are the safe things that you would run to, flight to quality. You almost are kind of in there. Anyone want to give it another stab? Yeah, okay, here's what's going on. Is that as the Federal Reserve has been trying to pull us out of the recession, one of the ways the Federal Reserve does it is to drop interest rates, to push them down. So if I have issued a bond, I would, at some time in the last couple of years, I can pretty much guarantee that the Fed has pushed interest rates across the economy down since then. So any coupon that I would have declared on the opening, on this primary of the bond, it would actually be above the market rate by now as the Fed pushes all interest rates down. So I'd see, I'd be a company, I'd say, all right, our coupon should be, let's say, 4.5% on these bonds, because that's the general level of interest rate for risk like our bond right now. And then 6 months later, the Fed has pushed all interest rates down, which means that, oh, now if we had issued that bond, we could have issued it at 4%, not 4.5%. So now I've got this bond hanging out there for the next 20, 30 years at a mark, at a coupon rate that's above what it needs to be for the market right now. Hence, these bonds will sell at a premium to par because their coupon is better than it needs to be in the current market environment. Kind of follow what I'm saying there? So as one thing that you would be sure of, maybe you would be sure of, is that as a market, as an economy improves, ultimately what will happen is that interest rates will begin to come back up. Competition for capital will be part of it. The Fed will start to sweat about inflation and will begin to try to claw back in some of that liquidity that it's just been shoveling into the market. So interest rates will come back up over the next few years. So as a general pattern, looking at these, if you were in this class, say, 2 years from now, and I hope none of you will still be here 2 years from now, I would pull up a chart like this, and you would see those bond prices generally closer to par at that time as the macroeconomic interest rate environment begins to come back up in a recovering economy. An economy that is coming back up, you'll see the interest rates come back up. That's just going to be normal. It's not a tragedy. It's going to be part because companies are going to be fiercely competing for capital. The government's going to need money. It's going to be issuing paper. And the Fed is going to start backing off all this easy money, which will mean that interest rates will begin to rise just from that kind of activity. So I would expect that these bond prices would tend to ease over the next few years. What would that mean as far as what you would expect in investments right now? Would you see investors, institutional investors, moving toward bonds, or would they be backing away from bonds and moving toward equity as a general rule right now? What would you expect? Would they be moving toward bonds now, or would they be moving away from bonds right now? Say it. What do you think? Give me a sense. Would you, as an investor, move toward bonds, or would you be moving away from them? Let me ask it to you this way. Okay, if you expect that over the next few years interest rates are going to rise, what's going to happen to the prices of those bonds? As interest rates go up, what will happen to the price of the bonds? Bingo. So do you want an investment that goes down in price? No. You will see right now that the investment community, especially the heavier institutional houses, they're just saying this mantra. The bond market is done, we are moving to equities. Bond market done, moving to equities. You hear it all over the street now that they are coming back into the stock markets and away from the bond markets as a general rule. And that means one of the challenges, though, is that bonds are a highly desirable form of investment for fixed income portfolios. Because you get that coupon. It just keeps coming and coming. It doesn't change the coupon, the amount of money you're getting every half year stays the same. So for fixed investment portfolios, bonds are desirable. So this puts those kinds of portfolios, those kinds of funds, those kinds of managed assets into a challenging position because, well, yeah, we want this fixed income. That's great for these people. But we're also, by doing that, consigning them to a market that we know is going to be easing back over the next few years. Okay, so what's the bottom line of that? A lot of these investment houses are trying to find what act like bonds but aren't bonds. One of the investment products that is being actively hawked and created and sold and pushed by some of these big houses right now are stocks that have very slow capital gains growth, but they have high dividend yields that have been consistently high over a long period of time. In other words, they want stocks that behave almost like bonds, just sort of like a fixed income dividend pushing out. You put a bunch of those together into a package, you sell it to fixed income portfolio managers and say, here you go. It's not a bond, but it's almost as good as a bond in terms of the certainty of its payout year over year. And we're probably not going to see that price decline that is the challenge with bonds over the next few years. If the way I am talking right now, and I'm doing this on purpose, if this interests you, if you find this kind of stuff kind of interesting to you, well, actually, you probably belong in finance because some people find this boring as hell. I mean, this is worse than a Justin Bieber concert. Other people say, oh, wow, it's that little twerp on stage and he's singing my song or something like that. Okay. I'm not going to go into this in huge detail, but do know that this is how you look at bonds, and if you are interested in this kind of work, bonds are still something that investors are interested in now, although we do know that there is the challenge out there. Now, I'm going to do one more thing since we have an opportunity today to do it. I'm going to really, you know, that was... Okay. By the way, this bond site is FINRA. You can just go onto Google and type F-I-N-R-A, and you'll come to the homepage of FINRA. And they've got actually pretty darn good data. One thing that I was going to show you today was Standard & Poor's Net Advantage, which we have access to as people of Illinois State University. Unfortunately, I could not get onto it. The servers were just grinding along. I couldn't get onto it. And that's a bad thing if you're really in the world of investments and you need to know real-time data to have the server just grinding away. We'll get back to you in an hour here. By that time, you could have taken a real beating. But I do want to show you one more thing here, if you'll bear with me. I'm going to do something here. So you don't see what I'm doing behind the curtain here. Wait. Try that again. Okay, here we go. Maybe I can get it this time. Okay. Here we go. One thing, while I have the opportunity to do this, I'm going to take you into the world of the intersection of finance and politics. You might have heard that there was sort of a little thing that happened yesterday. I don't know if you're up on current events, but we had a presidential election yesterday. And depending upon whom you would talk to, it is either awesome if you're some wide-eyed liberal, or it's the end of the human race if you're Donald Trump. He was tweeting all night. I thought, you're losing it, Donald. I mean, he was tweeting about revolution. You know, Donald, really? Yeah. He actually cleaned off some of the tweets because apparently he got sober enough to realize that it was scary. He was saying, you know, he was calling for revolution last night. You know, Donald, you know, your hairpiece is getting into your brain. Okay. First things first, general consensus, and I'll give you the background of this. First of all, the general consensus has been for several months that President Obama would re-win re-election. That was the sense of the street. that he would win. And I mean, I talked to people all over the place. And even at a Friday luncheon we had for the finance, Illinois State students in finance, where we had some financial executives who are ISU grads there. There was one of the students was trying to get them to say, well, Romney's going to win. You know, isn't this great? And they all just shut him down. They said, the markets have already pretty much figured that Obama will win. And I called it. It was a no-brainer. That meant, and this is usually the case, that the markets have already impounded a lot of political information before the average Joe gets to first base. And that means that actually, for the most part, when you see the news that is popular news, CNN, those kinds, Fox News and all of that, they are trying to create excitement and mystery and uncertainty, where oftentimes it's not nearly as uncertain as they're trying to do it. They make their money by keeping you on the edge of your seat, when perhaps, for the most part, the markets already knew this was going to happen. Now, I'm not promoting one way or the other. What I'm saying is that when you say, all right, what are the markets going to do now that he was reelected last night? For the most part, you're going to say the markets aren't going to do anything because of that, because I already knew it. That was already information that was in the prices that you saw. It doesn't mean that nothing will happen, because there's always a level of uncertainty. Something really surprising could happen. So what you see, the market reaction is muted. And what would be the result of the election is not going to be dramatic. If there's dramatic movement, it's not because of the election. That was mostly already there. However, there was residual reaction to it. Just that's pretty normal. You're 80% certain that one thing's going to happen, so you move towards that position in the market. The markets move toward that position, and then they leave a little bit of room so that what finally happens, they can finish putting the information in right after it happens. So what that means is that when we look at financial data, and I'm getting you into the back room of finance, where we actually think the numbers, yeah, we do those, but we have to think about things. So when I show you the market data for the day, and of course I didn't get it to unmute, so let's try that again. Okay, here we go. These are indices, of course. They are aggregate weighted aggregates of large numbers of stock. S&P is big, fat-ass companies. NASDAQ is small companies, small-cap companies, lots of them. The Dow is a narrow selection of 30 companies that are chosen by the bigwigs at Dow Jones, at the Dow place, as I call it. And so we'll see that first thing that you look at, consistency, across the board, and don't ever look at numbers. When they say the Dow fell by 300 points, don't worry about that. Look at the percentage, because the dollar amounts are irrelevant. Look at the percentages. Now, if I look at the percentages on the NASDAQ small cap, Standard & Poor's, is large companies, lots of big, heavy, meaty companies. The Dow is 800-pound behemoths in the market. What's the first thing that you see if you look at it? And don't trifle with me, madam. What do you see first? Let's try. What color are they all? Red. Okay, good. You start with the basics and you work from there. Okay. You know, friend or foe. We start with that before we kill. Okay, and you know, sometimes you're wrong. Hey, you know, my bad. But so they're all down. Okay, so it was a reaction. And also the next thing that you would look at. What do you see? Talk to me. Say that again. Oh, don't look at the news. Stock slammed. I mean, there you go again. Slammed. There's a word that's great for the audience. That's great for, you know, getting people to look. And that's what they did there. But behind that, we're objective. We have to sit back and say, well, okay, the first thing that I see after I see that they all were down is I see that it was a consistency. They were all down by a very similar percentages, which means that this is what we call a broad-based sell-off, a broad-based sell-off. And the point of that would be that the reaction was uniform. This wasn't something that they thought would happen to ginormous companies, but leave other companies alone. It wasn't something that was going to destroy the small business base of the country and leave the big companies alone. It was something that was a reaction across the board. It was an assessment of the business environment itself. There was a consistency. That's the thing you look at. It's any given number doesn't tell you as much as looking across numbers do. And so now we can say, okay, well, yeah, they were all down. That kind of sucked. That really kind of sucked there. So I'm not too worried about that, but that is a little strong. You have to find your own threshold. 0.5%, that's a little concern. You get up to 1%, that's noticeable. 2.5%, yeah, that's significant. That's a noticeable turn. So the market had, what residual reaction the market had was pretty strong on this one. Now, let's leave oil out of it. The 10-year bond, the yield on the 10-year bond shaved 11 basis points. Now, a basis point is 0.01%, and the yield shaved 11 basis points, which means the price went up because the yield went down. What would that mean? Price going up means, if stocks are going down, but bond prices are going up, what does that tell you was happening with investors? Stock prices going down, bond prices going up. As a matter of fact, I even gave you a word for it, but I don't know if you remember the word. Give me an idea. Stock prices went down, bond prices went up. What does that tell you is happening with investors? What are they doing? Bingo. They're selling stocks, buying bonds. Do any of you remember the term that I used for this phenomenon? I've mentioned it. I don't know if I ever really hit it dead on. It's called flight to quality. Flight to quality. In other words, you're moving towards safety. You're moving towards things that have a more certain payoff to them. That's flight to quality. Now, the next thing I'm going to do here is that I'm going to show you the cornerstone commodity. And I'm going to say a few words about that. The cornerstone commodity, gold. Jeez, God. $1,700. Jeez. You see that the price of gold went up? The old rule is, from stocks to bonds, from bonds to gold, from gold to bullets. And they don't quote bullets here, thank God, because Trump was probably buying up tons of them. But you see a very serious flight to quality happening here. It's consistent. Stock down, bond up, gold heading north. That's not a significant tick in gold. And that's important. You see how gold went up, but it wasn't some dramatic thing. It was about 0.25% rise in the price. That would tell me that it's only those crazy mofo gold bugs that are doing this. There is a huge global community of what you might call people waiting for either the rapture or the zombie apocalypse. They are constantly buying gold because they think the end times are near. And it's not a tiny community. It is huge. They have newsletters, websites. Even in the dark nets, you'll find their stuff. I have some of these crazy send me literature all the time or ask me questions. For some reason, they think I'm one of them. I don't know why. But these guys are seriously demented. Some of them talk about aliens among us. A lot of these people keep giant reserves of the old dollar bills that had silver certificate written on them. They keep giant reserves of those because those are the last real dollars. And so always when you're looking at gold prices, keep in mind that there is that taint of a noticeable community of basically batshit crazies. And that's a technical term we use in. So there you go. So I'm not really worried. It looks like it really, for the most part, the flight to quality stopped with bonds, and it actually looks like most of that flight to quality really was to quality. If you saw those prices, the closes, the interday closes, most of that was high yield bonds, just the investors moving out into the bonds. Does that mean that the markets are saying we are going to hell because we elected Barack Obama? No. The best assessment on the street is the concern that we are going to remain in a situation that has been persistent for the last 2 years of gridlock, where the House of Representatives, under the control of the Tea Party Republicans, are just going to not deal with the fiscal crisis in the way that we have been doing, wearing big boy pants for years and years. That's the big concern, is that we are coming towards that fiscal cliff when we are going to have to do something because tax rates are going to rise, and if they don't rise, the government shuts down. And we've got some people who might want to see that happen. They tried to do it a couple of years ago. It was scary as hell. That's what the concern is here. It's not so much, well, a liberal or a neoliberal or a conservative or a neoconservative was elected. The truth of the matter is the markets were pretty much... Romney and Obama were very similar. They were both essentially neoliberals. And so there wasn't that much concern on that. The concern here is more about the composition of the House, Senate, and White House all put together. Now I'm going to show you one more thing just to give you one last insight before I get back to bonds. Now what am I looking at here? This is the S&P. And I do want to get back to the main topic here, but I'm trying to expose you to our world of thinking, how we do things in our world. When you look at this chart, this is the movement of the Standard & Poor's 500 index through the day. This is the intraday chart of a big pile of 800-pound gorillas, each stock in the portfolio by its market cap weight of contributing to the portfolio. So this is big corporate America you're seeing here. Now I want you to notice that right off the bat you saw the sell-off. Do you see the sell-off right when the bell hit? Oh, it was the end of the world. Sell, 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 sell. But then, not long into the day, you saw the first rally. That would be the market. What happens right now is if a lot of the movement of the markets is computers deciding for themselves with tiny little touches from very powerful investment analysts, the computers then go. And they look at each other. Oh, that computer's selling, I better sell. Then that computer looks, oh, that computer's selling, I better sell. So they have a slight reinforcement to them. And then that's what you saw, was the market going down hard. Then you saw this rally happen. That would probably be bargain hunters. You see, because when the computers start slamming the stocks down, they take everything down. The good people and the bad people, the great companies and the awful companies, everything gets taken down together. And then there is a time for the bargain hunters to come in and say, what was knocked down that didn't deserve to be knocked down? And then you can essentially go in, quickly grab up stuff that got slammed that really didn't deserve it. So you saw the bargain hunters run in and they rally, and they caused a rally. And then the machines took over, and they just beat the hell out of the market. there was a wide-based rally in here as some more bargain hunters came in. And then it was pretty much down into hell, like that. Now, the next thing that you want to notice here is what happened for the rest of the day. Notice that the sell-off ended down here. And then you had this broad-based buy-in, bargain hunters picking up stuff, and then essentially everyone changing their diapers about how the election had gone. And you saw this ride-off here. And you had this long period of stability through the day, back and forth. And then you had a little bit of action, dumping some of the stuff that you'd bought that you really didn't need. And then you had basically like this. And then at the end of the day, you had another sell-off. And I would guess that that was the computers flexing their muscles saying, we said down, you stay down, bitch. So that's basically what it looks like to me. Now, I could be wrong. It could have been other things, but that's how we do it in finance. Like I said, we're more the analysts. We can, and we even get into philosophy when we're drunk. But we look behind numbers. That's what distinguishes us from accounting. The accountants create numbers, and there are all kinds of bean counters and computer techs. But at the end of the day, there have to be humans that actually assess what's going on, how much, which direction, who farted, all those important questions in life. Well, I don't know if that's, oh, you know what I mean, for God's sake. Okay, that's enough on that for now. I'm going to go to and just lay out a couple of pointers here. Bear with me. Let me kill this. Log off. Yes. Okay. Now, I want to go through bonds again with you, breaking down bonds into different types. My God. Okay. Now, I want to go into different, and I talked about government bonds. You talk about bills, notes, bonds. And that has to do with the time to mature, the length of the bond, the duration of the bond, all that kind of stuff. And I've got that behind you. Now, let me quickly go through, first of all, government bonds, and just lay out a couple of different kinds of government bonds there are. Of course, there's the difference between the maturities. You've got your treasury bills, your treasury notes, your treasury bonds. Then the next thing that I would probably want to touch into a little bit is what kinds of different bonds are there? Is there just a government bond, or are there different kinds? The answer is yes. Now, the first kind are the what you would call treasury bonds. Those are issued by the United States government to pay its bills. It's borrowing by the government. They sell the bonds, and when investors buy these bonds, those investors are lending the government money. Those investors are just monsters, huge things. Institutions, insurance companies, large mutual funds, lots of our government debt is bought by foreign governments. We buy cheap products from overseas, and we exchange a cheap toaster, for example, made in China, for a $1 bill. The Chinese central bank takes that dollar bill and puts it into their foreign reserves. Then they issue the merchant in China the equivalent. Actually, they cheat. They issue three times the equivalent to the merchant. So the merchant gets yuan. But the central bank of China gets the actual dollar bill, and that becomes part of the foreign reserve of that country. Same thing goes for all the other countries where we buy more from them than we sell to them. They accumulate a net foreign reserve. Among the countries that do that, what's our big 800-pound gorilla? Hint, it's not China. Who's the big one we send money to? Who do we buy most of our oil from? Do you know that? Oh, huh? Well, no, countries. BP is part of it, but Argentina, no. It's Canada. Eh? You're buying moose oil. Okay? I'll bet you didn't know that, did you? Hey, wait a minute. You know, you mean those guys up north? Aren't they our friends? Well, yeah, they are damn well our friends because we buy a whole hell of a lot of stuff from them. And so these countries, and don't get me wrong, the Arab countries are in there too. And we buy oil from them. And China, Japan, other countries with which we engage in trade, we are such a strong economy. They want our currency. They love themselves our currency because we are a safe investment haven. When those dollars accumulate in those central banks of foreign countries, the only place those dollars can be invested is back in the country of mint. That's how the world works. They can't use a dollar somewhere else in the world. They have to use it here. So the Chinese accumulate those dollars. The Canadians accumulate those dollars. Arab countries, OPEC, Canada, all those countries, Japan, they accumulate our dollars. They have to invest them back here. They are more than willing to simply because we are such a high investment grade country. Their investments are safe here. Buying treasury bonds, investing in our government is a hugely safe operation. That's the danger of having idiots trying to disrupt and shut down our government just to promote their own damned agendas. Because what can happen is the rest of the world, which has seen us as the shining beacon light of, not of freedom, who cares about freedom, we're corporate people, but as a shining beacon of investment safety, rule of law, government stability, we shake that, those countries say basically, you know, FTS to us. We'll stop putting dollars. We'll just dump our dollars out into the currency, global currency markets. We'll find somewhere else to go if we don't provide them with that continuing source of reliability of our investments. Treasury bonds are guaranteed by the full faith and credit of the United States government. They will not default. If all hell broke loose, the sovereign can raise taxes to get the money to pay off bonds. If that doesn't work, we can just invade another damn country. I mean, we do it all the time. We're good at it. We have been doing this all through our history. We will pay our bills as a nation. Oh, I heard the government might default on this. Don't bet on it. If that happens, all bets are off. We might as well give up the entire concept of civilization if the United States fails. They are backed by the full faith and credit of the United States government. Extremely safe. Also, unfortunately, very low yield because they are so safe. So, you know, that risk, there's that risk and expected return relationship coming back at you. Okay, now, treasury bonds are not the only kind of government bond. There are what are called agency bonds. Agency debt is not backed by the full faith and credit of the United States government, but everyone assumes that an agency bond would be backed if it ever got into serious trouble. I mean, technically, no, they're not. They are not underwritten by the government, but we know for a fact that if, say, a Connie Lee fell or a Freddie Mac fell, the government would step in. Otherwise, the markets would be disrupted so much by it. So investors pretty much assume that, yeah, this agency debt is going to be taken care of. Now, what do I mean by agency debt? This is debt that is issued by agencies of the federal government or agencies that have been authorized by federal law. Among those would be Ginnie Mae's, one of those companies that gathers up individual mortgages, puts them into ginormous packages, turns them into sort of like a squishy giant bond, and then sells them to investors like China, Canada, big trust funds, institutions, pension plans, things like that. Others among them are Freddie Mac, that's our farm program, Sallie Mae, our student loan program. Connie Lee is another one. You've got even TVA. Does anyone know what TVA is? Have you ever heard of it? Tennessee Valley Authority. These are agencies that have been authorized or essentially created by the federal government. They issue their own debt to fund their projects, and then from there, essentially, those projects carry on, generate revenue, and that revenue pays back the bonds through time. Those are the agency bonds. Again, not as high an investment grade as treasuries, but we know that, you know, we know already that the government saved the ass of the big ones. Fannie Mae was saved by the government. So, yeah, they're protected. Now, take yourself down below that, and you get the municipals. Those are called munis. And I've mentioned some of this before. I'm just getting into a little more detail with these government bonds like this, the munis. Now, by the Constitution of the United States, the federal government cannot tax your earnings if you invest in a municipal. So in other words, investing in munis protects you from federal taxes, your gains on them, your coupons and all that kind of stuff. You won't be taxed on that. Now, in certain circumstances, even the state can't tax you. And in some circumstances, even the city can't tax you. Those are double down munis that are pretty awesome. The thing of it is, though, don't you ever buy a muni unless you are as rich as someone, unless you're making over $1 million a year, because you see they're tax exempt. So they act as a tax shield. Now remember that a tax shield, the value of a tax shield is the amount that is taxable, the taxable cash flow times 1 minus your tax rate. So in other words, for a given taxable cash flow, you are shielded to the extent of 1 minus your tax your marginal tax rate, the tax rate on your last dollar. So in other words, unless you are making high income, the tax shield is not very valuable. If you're 15%, 25%, that tax shield is not going to be as valuable to you as it would be to a 31%er, 35%er, or if we get the tax rates back to the way they were before the madness began, 39%er. You know, here's the other problem with it. These things are adjusted so that when the yield is calculated, when they figure out how much of a coupon to pay, they pay a coupon that assumes that you are in the highest marginal tax bracket. So they would pay a coupon that would be best for a rich person. For a poor person, that coupon would be worth less to you because the coupons are created for rich people and their taxes. For you, for lower tax marginal tax rates, these things actually are a bad investment. It's essentially the same thing that happens with the deductibility of home mortgage interest. When you buy a house, that home mortgage interest rate deduction means nothing to you if you're in a 15% tax bracket compared to if you are in a 35% marginal tax bracket. There you go. A lot of these investments like this, munis, they are not for your average person. They are not even for upper middle class people. These are for actually people in the top marginal tax bracket because the coupons are designed for rich people and for high tax marginal tax rate institutions and investors. Okay, now that's the munis. And there are different kinds of municipals. They fund all kinds of things, municipals do. Municipals can fund, you can talk about a municipal that funds road projects in a state, a municipal that funds a new water system for a group of communities, or even munis that are for bond levies for building schools or for maintaining schools. And those are the ones where you get into this interesting thing where, well, how do these municipals guarantee or promise investors that they are going to pay? One of the most common ways that municipals have, especially if we're talking about school levies, is that they have their revenue bonds. Essentially, the voters say, we are going to allow our school district to borrow $20 million to build some new schools because our schools are packed to the brim. Okay, if the voters say yes to that, what they're voting for is not just for the school district to issue this muni, the school district bond, but they're also voting for taxes for the period necessary to pay off the bond as well. So that's one of the problems, of course, is that these cause your taxes to go up, these kinds of munis like that do. So the first rule is, if you don't need voter approval, for God's sake, don't ask for it, because they're going to say no. Our kids can live like sardines in a school, and that's one of the big challenges, is the funding mechanism for things like schools, the old muni revenue bond, as we call it, revenue bond or tax bond. They just don't work because people are really not all that thrilled about voting to raise their property taxes. Okay, now that's kind of the spectrum. There are other kinds of bonds out there, too, that are floating around. I mean, you know, you might someday hear something called a Brady bond. Brady bonds, there was a Treasury Secretary some years back. In the 70s, when oil prices were skyrocketing, there was a lot of money being lent to less developed countries, LDCs. And unfortunately, that debt, we overextended, the U.S. banks did, and even European banks, the IMF and the World Bank, we lent a lot too much money to these countries. In some cases, it got so ugly that we had to overthrow governments and kill a lot of people. But, you know, there you go. But overall, what happened was that a lot of banks were left hanging with a lot of debt that they had lent to the less developed countries, assuming that they were going to generate a lot of revenue from high oil prices and all that. Well, when the floor fell out from commodity prices in the 80s, these countries just basically said, "We can't pay. Are you kidding me? Oh, this is ridiculous." It was essentially the national equivalent of what happened in the mortgage market with those speculative loans that were not really good ideas. This happened in the 80s with the governments of the world, the less developed countries. So what we had to do was figure out some way, all right, these banks are left holding the bag for a lot of money that the governments kind of pushed them to lend to these countries, and these countries can't pay it off. They're defaulting. So in some cases, we balled up those loans. We packaged them into products that had some value. The government could kind of take them over and then sell these speculative instruments renegotiated with these governments to high-class, very powerful investors. So sometimes, and these were called the Brady bonds. Sometimes you'll hear about those from time to time. I mean, what are you going to do? Are you going to foreclose on a country that can't pay its debts? No, this was about our best guess. They're high risk, obviously, but there is some life to them. I'm going to let it go here. That's all. Go home.